We have one matter on the docket, this afternoon, on the 1:30 docket, and it's people against Brock, to council. Tables are here on that matter. We have read the briefs in this case. We are well familiar with the record, and that helps you streamline the presentation. So be it. I ask that, ladies and gentlemen, the audience turn off pagers and sell your telephones so that we're not bothered during the course of the argument. And with that request, council, you may proceed.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Elizabeth McClintock for the appellant defendant Jeffrey Brosh. Your honors are all familiar with the briefs. The issue that I think needs to be addressed by this court is basically the screening device that has been utilized by the state of Colorado in making an assessment whether a convicted sex offender qualifies as a sexually violent predator for registration purposes. Mr. Brosh was convicted for his first felony offense of a sexual assault on a child, and he was assessed as a sexually violent predator. Our issue here is that the screening device, the sexual offense risk scale, SORS, does not comport with the statute 183414.5 subsection 4. That screening device specifically checks to see if someone is at a risk to fail treatment. It does not assess whether someone is at a risk to reoffend, and not just reoffend for any crime, but reoffend for the enumerated crimes listed in the statute under the specific circumstances that are required by the statute, namely, that the victim is a stranger to the defendant, or the defendant chose that victim and pursued a relationship in order for the purpose of sexual victimization.
Ms. McClintock, one is not amenable to a treatment. Isn't that an indication that they'll be?
No. And it's not just amenable to treatment. It's also, it says, amenable to supervision. It does not differentiate between which is which. Someone could be unsupervisable because they have an alcohol problem. That does not mean that they are going to reoffend. Someone could be unsupervisable because they refuse to make their appointments. That does not mean that they are going to reoffend. Also, there has been no study to show that what they are looking at with this risk assessment actually shows that somebody who has been convicted of a sex offense will commit another sex offense. There's been no follow-up to see if that is in fact the case.
Are you talking generally or in this case specifically?
Well, we're the first ones apparently to raise this issue. No one else has looked at the fact that the SORS does not actually assess what the statute requires it to assess.
Doesn't the SORS, based on, and doesn't it explicitly say it's based on research that does the very thing that you say it didn't do?
No, it is not based upon that. It is based upon a study from 1994 that talks about whether or not someone can be supervised or is amenable to treatment. It does not assess whether or not somebody is going to reoffend. And I would purport, in my general knowledge of sex offenses, because I do handle an awful lot of these cases, that most of the people that are revoked and sent to prison are not revoked from supervision or treatment because they have reoffended. It's because they are not amenable to supervision and they cannot meet the requirements of probation or community corrections. It is not reoffense that is doing that. And that is why we think that this issue is ripe to be addressed to the courts. This is not an assessment tool that actually does what the legislature requires it to do, which is to see whether or not these offenders will reoffend, and specifically reoffend with sexual offenses. Does that answer your question, sir? A little bit. I would argue that the complete basis for the SORS is outdated. It has not been updated, and it is not appropriate under the statute.
Is that a question for us, or is that a question for the legislature?
Well, I would say in this particular situation, it's a question for you, because if the assessment tool does not address what the court needs in order to make a sufficient finding, in order to find someone such as Mr. Brosh to be a sexually violent offender, then in this particular situation, you should address it. If the legislature, of course, would like to fix it, I think that is the only place that it can be fixed. Your honors are not going to be able to come up with a new screening device for the trial courts to use in order to meet the statutory requirements. Either the legislature has to direct a department to do that, or they need to change the statute. If they want to put in there, if someone is not amenable to supervision or treatment, and that's why they should be classified as a sexually violent predator, then that's what they should put in the statute. But that is not how the statute is written. More is required.
Ms. McClintock, first, you'll have to forgive us all. This is a little like the Starship Enterprise.
Sure.
I'm not used to the acoustics.
Yeah, you guys are so close.
We're going to get there.
Okay.
If we accept your invitation, I take it that no one to date has been properly convicted of being a sexually violent predator.
I would argue that if the point of contention at hearings for sexually violent predators has been the risk assessment, which for all of them, yes, it would be, I would say, yes, there is a problem there. Because if that is the tool that the trial courts have been using, it has been used incorrectly. On its face, it says it is not a tool for determining whether or not someone will reoffend.
Where does it actually say that?
At the beginning of the SORS form itself, it states, and I can find, I'm sorry, specifically, this assessment is used to identify an offender's risk to fail supervision or treatment.
But that's different than explicitly saying it is not to be used for purposes of finding as to whether the person is likely to be. Say that explicitly anywhere.
No, it does not. No, it does not say it specifically cannot be used for that purpose. However, if the legislature has required that in order for this finding to be made of an SVP, that there is an assessment saying someone will reoffend, then the assessment the trial court is using needs to actually determine that. Not whether or not they're going to fail supervision or treatment, but whether or not they are going to commit not just any offense and not just any violent crime, but the four enumerated sex offense crimes under the specific circumstances as required by the legislature. Trial court did. He said he was satisfied with, the judge stated he was satisfied that the SORS complied, and that was about it.
The trial court also said it looked not just at the screening instrument, but also the sentence report and all the other documents as well. Why can't the judge use all of those materials to make that finding?
I suppose the judge could use all of those materials, except for the statute specifically says that that portion of the determination as to whether or not they're at a risk to reoffend and commit these particular crimes under these particular circumstances should be based upon an assessment that is provided to the court. Otherwise, I think you have judges, first of all, in this situation, the order talks extensively, more than any other part, about Mr. Brosh's alcoholism. Well, Mr. Brosh never admitted to being an alcoholic. I think if you get into situations like that, if that's where we're going to be going, then we're looking well outside the record at information that is not appropriate for a judge to be looking at unless the defendant specifically admits to those facts. But yes, they're going to have to look at the full gamut of questions there, but for this particular part of the statute, this is what the legislature has required, and it's not being met. your honors have any further questions. I was going to leave the second issue simply because it really ties in with the first. If the assessment screening is not appropriate, then Mr. Brush should not have been found to be a sexually violent predator. The facts were not there. They could not have been there. The other issues about the points that were assessed and their subjective nature, which we have pointed out to the court, Mr. Brosh being in custody, but still losing a point on the SOAR scale because he wasn't on time for appointments when he couldn't even control that issue at all. If he had not had that, he would not have had one of those boxes checked, and he would not have been labeled under the assessment as a sexually violent predator. It's a subjective instrument, and it is an instrument that does not comport with the legislative requirements per the sexually violent predator statute. I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McClintock. You have 4 minutes and a half.
May it please the court, your honors. My name is Rhonda White, attorney registration number 35996, and I represent the people in this matter. I would just like to start with the criteria for actually designating an offender to be a sexually violent predator. First, the offender must be 18 years or older when the offense is committed. Second, the offender must be convicted of one or more of the enumerated offenses. Third, the offender must meet the specific relationship criteria. And fourth and finally, the offender must be determined by an evaluator in the trial court to be likely to reoffend by committing one of the enumerated offenses under the specific relationship criteria. So as we know, the defendant's arguments relate only to that fourth and final criteria. Importantly, the sexually violent predator determination is not additional punishment, but only relates to the community notification status and internet registration of an offender, which in part ensures public safety and educates the community. The notification process is targeted, and therefore the scope of it is limited to specific groups and communities. With respect to the defendant's first issue, that the risk scale found in the assessment does not meet the statutory requirements under the fourth part of the SVP statute. That fourth part states specifically that an offender who, based upon the results of a risk assessment screening instrument developed by the Division of Criminal Justice in consultation with and approved by the Sex Offender Management Board, is likely to subsequently commit one or more of the enumerated offenses under Part 2 of the statute under the specific relationship criteria defined in Part 3. The risk assessment screening instrument was created by the Sex Offender Management Board as directed by the legislature, and as relevant here, the assessment sets forth a checklist for the probation officer and evaluator to complete. The Sex Offender Management Board identified several clinical issues, and the 10-item actuarial risk scale was the final product. The first portion of the risk scale under Part 3A it states that the Division of Criminal Justice and the Sex Offender Management Board worked together to develop the risk scale in order to identify an offender's risk to fail treatment or supervision. And further, offenders who score four or more on the risk scale were three times as likely to be arrested for a violent crime. The assessment then references the Sex Offender Management Board handbook, which further defines violent crime and importantly sets forth the correlation between failure in treatment and the risk of reoffending. Specifically, the handbook states that there is considerable support for treatment failure as a risk indicator. And further, sex offender studies document the link between treatment failure and rearrest and found noncompliance with treatment to predict rearrest in the community. Therefore, the Sex Offender Management Board has determined that there is a clear and tangible connection between failure at treatment and the risk to reoffend. Further, the handbook explains that the assessment uses violent arrest as the reoffending measure in sex offender studies because violent crimes are more than twice as likely to be reported than sexual crimes. Further, the handbook validates the use of violent crime as a reasonable and accurate measure because such crimes have a significant impact on public safety, and especially for sex offenders, typically have a sexual component. Further, there's no dictate that the specific statutory language must be in the assessment. I think that it's clear that the Sex Offender Management Board targeted those specific scale and risk factors to make that determination.
Help me with the connection between use of the term violent crime and crimes that fit within the framework of the type of crimes you have to be likely to commit in order to satisfy the fourth factor of the statute?
Well, I think that the handbook makes it clear that the reason that it's using violent crimes, while some of those crimes definitely have a violence component, they don't necessarily need to have that. However, they've determined that violent crimes are a much more accurate measure to track when a sex offender does reoffend. And typically, if you have a sex offender, that crime will have a sexual component to it. So I think that the research dictates that violent crimes are much more likely to be reported than sexual offenses. And when you have a specific offender, that crime is most likely going to be one of those enumerated offenses based on their research.
So, I mean, it's a logical extension to what you're saying, that if the defendant commits aggravated burglary, for example, which is, I think, a violent crime, even or first degree assault, that he or she's more likely to commit sexual assault on a child in a position of trust?
Well, I think that's why we have all of these components in the entire risk assessment screening instrument. I think that that is a very narrow portion of the instrument. And so it might not be the case that a sex offender who then commits aggravated burglary would have committed one of those enumerated offenses. However, by meeting all of the other specific risk scale data factors, I think that that makes it more clear, at least from the expert's opinion, that they're more than likely to reoffend one of those enumerated offenses.
So I take it that the Sex Offender Management Board then essentially constructed a profile and came to the conclusion that there were several incidents of behavior that fit that profile, and that's why we have the SOARs.
Exactly. I mean, I think that you do have to look at the whole assessment, and obviously we have someone who, you know, has to meet these specific criteria. So in essence, I think it is a profile. I wouldn't necessarily use that term. I think that they have to meet certain criteria, and based on the studies that, you know, the board has conducted, that's where we're getting what the statute dictates, and that's where we're getting the data to show the likelihood to reoffend, which is just a sub-portion of the SVP determination.
I guess that may be a poor choice of words. What I'm sensing is that they were concerned with a universe of people and narrowing down that universe to come to a somewhat reasonable prediction that a person would reoffend by committing a sexual offense. And that's the connection between the SOARs and the statutory definition of sexually violent predator.
I think that that's exactly right. And I think that, you know, there's very specific, you know, if you look at the risk scale, there's very specific things that an offender has to meet in order to get, you know, to meet this criteria. So I do think that based on all of their studies, and they, in the handbook, they go through each and every one of the 10 different risk scale factors and show the data behind why that is, you know, part of their determination. So I think that in essence it does create, you know, they are trying to limit down, you know, a group of people, and based on these factors really pinpoint who's likely to reoffend.
So in answer to or dealing with Ms. McClintock's concern over alcoholics, for example, mm-hmm. The universe of alcoholics certainly wouldn't fit a profile sexually violent predator, but being an alcoholic may be one of those factors that ultimately finds its way into the universe of sexually violent predators.
Absolutely, and I think even here, as the trial court recognized, these acts were committed with alcohol playing a pretty significant role. So although that's not, you know, a determination, one factor. So if, you know, for example, alcohol was the only factor here, I don't think we'd have the same result. I think you have to have several other risk scale factors being met obviously you have to have four or more in order to make that determination, on top of meeting the first three criteria of the sexually violent predator designation.
Let me ask you a legal question. I know that over the past handful of years, there have been a number of published cases from our court and perhaps from the Supreme Court on sexually violent predators. Are you aware of any case or any others that dealt with this specific legal issue?
Not with respect to that the statute and this risk scale. I mean, I've dealt with the fourth portion of the statute, but not with respect to.
I understand, it's a matter of evidence, but I mean, the legal right. issue that's in front of us here, where many cases consider that issue.
I'm not aware of any. And I think that, you know, I think additionally here, you have a trial court that is making the specific finding that the defendant is likely to reoffend, and the trial court then went on to say one or more of the enumerated offenses under those circumstances. So I think here, you know, the trial court made that determination, and I think that, you know, we need to give deference to that and as well as the evaluator's recommendations.
Counsel, you referred several times to reoffending, and am I correct that the manual defines reoffending as an arrest?
It's
as opposed to a conviction.
It can be. I believe it is rearrest. Yes. So reoffending. I don't know if there's, you know, a distinction between reoffending and rearrest, but I believe that, you know, they're pretty similar in the perspective of the handbook.
And is there any issue with regard to whether there's a correlation between being arrested and being convicted?
I don't know the answer to. I feel, you know, that they're. I think that they look at it very specifically as to what happens, and they've looked at the data, and it actually they update the handbook quite regularly, probably once every few years, and so they use data based on 12 months, 30 months, and 5 years as to who's being. And I think they do use the term rearrest, but I think that they look at reoffending because I think that is obviously a lower threshold than would be for rearrest. I think with respect to the second issue, I will rest on the brief, and if there are no further questions, the people would ask that this court reaffirm the defendant's sexually violent predator designation.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank
Meyer.
You.
Ms. McClintock?
Your Honor, if I could just address a few issues. The SOARS assessment. The profile used there was not a profile developed to tell if someone would reoffend. It was a profile specifically developed to see if someone would fail in treatment or supervision. That says, it is said specifically, as mentioned by the state, in Part 3A of the SOMB Sex Offender Risk Assessment Scales. The profile was not developed to see about reoffending.
Excuse me, counsel. I'm not sure that's quite right. I understand the language you're reading, but isn't it that if you read the manual, they see failure to comply with supervision, whatever that language is, as being a proxy for reoffending? Now, can they bear that out with statistics?
No, I don't agree with that, Your Honor, and that's because the specific thing says it was the actual actuarial risk assessment scale to be used in the identification of an offender's risk to fail supervision / treatment. It goes on to talk about how they want to look at that, well, what I find interesting here, that an offender who has a higher score on the SOARS is 3 times as more likely to be arrested for a violent crime. Well, number one, 3 times is more likely than who? Someone who never has been convicted of a crime? What is that based upon? What is the comparison? There is no information about that. Additionally, arrested. I would state to you that no, reoffending is not a lower threshold than being arrested. Or being arrested in this country does not mean that you have committed another offense. It means that you have been charged with another offense. It is not equal to the likelihood of having committed another offense.
There is some statistical correlation existing between arrests and convictions, right?
And, well, yes, because if you're not arrested, you're never going to be convicted. However, in this situation, too, we're talking about the 3 times is more likely than somebody, we don't know who, to be arrested for a violent crime. Well, several of the enumerated crimes under this statute are not violent crimes. Someone might think that they're violent to them personally, but under the statutes, they are not violent crimes. They are separate and distinct sexual offenses. And if the statute is to be complied with, if the assessment is supposed to do what the trial courts actually need it to do. It needs to look at those particular crimes, and it needs to tell the trial courts, if this happens, we think that there's more of a likelihood that he is going to do that again under those particular circumstances. Otherwise, it's a meaningless assessment.
But isn't that exactly what the form does? I mean, you've got somebody who's all, I mean, even to get to the fourth factor, the person has to have been convicted of one of the qualifying crimes. So he's already a sex, he or she's already a sex offender.
Mm-hmm.
So if all the manual and the SORS is saying is, if that person, maybe more likely fails treatment, fails supervision, they're more likely to commit a violent crime. Why can't that carry over to, and that person is more likely to commit the same kind of crime he or she committed before?
Well, I guess because you're labeling them as a sexually violent predator with additional restrictions on their liberty, additional restrictions of where they can be placed as part of their sentencing. It is not an abstract label, Your Honor. They are, yes, already going to be labeled as a sexual offender. They are going to have to register. However, if you label them as a sexually violent predator, that labeling requirement goes on for the rest of their life. There is no opportunity to be removed from that list. There, you cannot be placed into community corrections. It's just not, they are never going to accept you with that label. There are real implications for someone who is labeled a sexually violent predator. And if you're going to jump up those requirements for someone who has a first offense, then you need to comply with the statute. There needs to be a justification for that increased supervision and that decrease in the person's personal liberty. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. McClintock. Thank you again, Ms. White. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course. That completes our 1:30 docket, and the bailiff may announce the recess.
All rise. The court will be in recess, subject to call.